This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Welcome everybody to this second DGHA members meeting for the year. I'll pass over to Erica, who will do a roll call for us, please.
Hello everyone and welcome. It's Erica speaking. On our roll call, in no particular order, we have Geraldine, we have Lorinda, we have Lester, Margaret, Nadia, Anna Gigliotti Script. The Bests, I'm not sure who JW is, but hello.
Hi everyone, it's Judy here.
Oh, Judy.
So I'm the
Wayne?
JW, yes.
Yep. Hi Judy, welcome. Hey. We've got Lee Kumatat, we have Sally, we have Stacey, and we have Ray Is. And we've also got some people coming in now. We've got coming in, we have Jamie Kelly, Matt Wood, and I'm guessing Joyce.
Joyce is here, yep.
Yep, see, good guess on my part.
Right.
Welcome, Joyce. We just did a roll call for the 16 people that are here.
Oh, excellent.
We also had one apology from Karen Passmore from Western Australia.
Right.
And just to let people know, Matt Wood is a Seeing Eye Dog instructor in WA.
Correct.
And so I'm presuming there might be points where he might want to jump in as well. Please feel free to do so. So the program, I'll let Lester and co explain what the program is, but I'll introduce Lester as the client services manager. He worked in Guide Dogs New Zealand from 2002. In 2008, he joined Vision Australia Seeing Eye Dogs. He gained a diploma of orientation and mobility. I wish I could speak. He also is a member of the development committee of the International Guide Dog Federation. And he's obviously interested in the client experience, staff development, technology, and innovation. We also have jumping in to speak alongside Lester is, oh my gosh, Dr. Geraldine Lane, and she has a dog that is working both as a dog trained within the wheelchair program, but as she said earlier, she's versatile. She's a she, isn't she?
He's a she, yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. And we have Matt Wood also along with us. So, Lester, I'll leave you three to it.
Thanks, Nadia. Hi, everyone. Thanks for the invite. We hope we can, I think it's supposed to be an hour, so I hope we can make us stop talking by within an hour because when we start just blabbing about, you know, things we enjoy, things we're proud of, and things we're passionate about, then we'll carry on. The idea, as Nadia was describing a few minutes before, is I'll give an overview of how it is we developed the program, how we got here, and then we'll have Geraldine talking about her experience from her first person perspective. We have Matt join us as well. I haven't given Matt a whole lot of heads up, but he has been one of the instructors, one of the Seeing Eye Dog instructors heavily involved in the program. We have about three people who have been instrumental to this program so far, and that's the idea. And then at the end or after that, we'll open for questions from everyone. Yeah, questions could be, of course, for any of us. And we'll see how we go. So, the Seeing Eye Dog wheelchair program that we were invited to talk about today started. I will say that it started in 2019, but the conversations started in 2019, so it feels now actually quite a long time ago. And anything pre-COVID feels like a long time ago. It probably considerably much longer than it actually is. But when we, at some point, when we stopped to think about it and consider that we developed it during COVID, which was, it turned out to be a blessing and a curse. You know, we had what many people felt like it was, call it downtime. You know, we couldn't do a lot of other things, being most of us were based in Victoria. But also, it was a pretty heavy load on top of what everyone were going through at the time. The what and at the time, I think I was speaking with Nadia as well in her in a previous role that she
Sorry,
had, and
Lester, can I just jump in? Somebody's got is unmuted and we're hearing their screen reader program. I'm not sure who that is, but could you just double check and mute, please? Thank you.
The thanks, Nadia. The conversation I was having with Nadia, which I thought it was interesting at that time, it's many years ago. I don't know if you remember this, Nadia. I was probably give you an update in your capacity as a client representative, client reference group representative at the time for Vision Australia, and you asked, how did the program start? And you know, if it was from us or if it was client driven. And I said it was because of a client and it was because of client need. And you said, oh, good. And I remember at the time thinking, ah, yes, that is a humongous point. It wasn't, we were so focused on how we're going to make this work that we kind of missed that. But it was really interesting in terms of perspective, right? To think about how it is that we even got to thinking about it and considering it was out of client need. It was someone, if we want to go back to that, to the very beginning, it was someone who had approached us maybe 1 or 2 years prior to that, and we said, no, we don't do, we don't know, we don't know how to, and therefore we can't support a dog guide of any sort with a wheelchair, manual, electric, it doesn't matter, we just don't have the skills. And so that was the first answer. And then the second time the person approached us, it was a different conversation. It was different people. It was only a couple of years, but some things had already moved. And we had a different approach. It wasn't, I'm not going to say that it was easy. I'm not going to say that it was simple. You know, it was a lot of work. It was a protracted conversation to begin for us to even understand the scope, and then once we understood it, to of course have that conversation with the person. But we knew it existed. We knew it's a program that happens, that had happened for a long time overseas. I actually don't have the exact dates, but I know that it's from the early, around the 2000s. I'm not sure how early, much earlier than that. There was a I'm talking about a developed, established program, not that, you know, for many years, instructors in different parts of the world will be finding solutions for the clients they work with. That's always happened. And I've been involved with some of those. I've observed some of those, but not in a program fashion. I'm aware of this one from the United States from around early 2000s, maybe late 90s. I'm not positive. Not sure exactly. And that program, that was Guide Dogs for the Blind in on the west coast of the US. They have facilities in California and in Oregon. And I'm gonna say, I think it was around 20, when are we? Yeah, 2010 or so, 2010 and between 2010 and 2012, Guide Dogs UK, which is the biggest organization in the world, they took that program and started running themselves in the UK. And it was probably a little before that, maybe 09. And the same program. And so they adapted to their reality, but that's where they got it from. And at that stage, when we started having the conversation and how, you know, who does it? How can it be done? Of course, are we going to create our own wheel from scratch, or should we go looking for someone who has already created a wheel that works, and there's no pun intended on this one, but that works and is actually going strong for, at that point was, 20 years, at least 20 years, if not more. So we started talking with the UK, and the colleagues were incredible, really incredible. This was already 2020. It was already COVID, and they had, they also had a bit of time, I suppose, but they were incredibly generous and donating all the material and all the thinking. We had multiple Zoom meetings with them, conversations about the material they were sending us and their experience. Primarily two instructors, two really experienced instructors, 25 years plus in the industry. And they had designed or adapted the program to the UK and to their reality. So they were, and because they had already gotten the program from somewhere else, they were more than happy to pass it on and to provide their experience on top. Was really interesting. We had a lot of material, a lot of written material, a few conversations with them, a few videos as well from how some very short videos of how they're not so much their training, but the end product, how their clients were safely working with their new wheelchair guide dogs over there. And it was really interesting. And from their experience, even of their experience of how they took the program from the US to the UK, we also got a little bit of that. We got an idea of how we would take it from the UK to Australia, how we would adapt it over here. And so what kind of support from other disciplines, physiotherapists, occupational therapists. So that was a big part of the blueprint as well. And making sure that we started from the beginning, that we knew not only instead of, being too focused on how, say, how to train a dog or what are the tasks that the dogs do, the extra tasks, but knowing what does an assessment process entail, what a dog selection entails, and all those things that were really important for us, or the questions that we as instructors were really concerned about. How do you, what's a suitable dog? What's an ideal dog? What's, and does anyone who have a wheelchair is going to be and has vision loss or is blind is going to be suitable to have a dog? And all those questions, they were amazing, providing the information and all the experience they had. We I guess this is not the super exciting part, but we liaised with the occupational therapists from Vision Australia, colleagues from our orientation and mobility teams to make sure that we weren't missing anything. The very first, we had heavy support from we have an internal clinical governance department who supported us really, really well throughout developing the program and throughout the first few client interactions that we had to, so that again, we were hopefully not missing anything and making sure that we were maintaining that safety bar, on the same spot high for everyone. We then, I believe that it took us, we set ourselves anything between 12 and 18 months at that point to get to a place. I think we said 12 months, sorry, 12 months to come up with, to be in a confident place that we could have an assessment, a formal assessment. And that's how slow we took it. That's how methodical we wanted to be about it. It took us 12 months to understand the program and adjust it to our reality and say, then we're ready to start. And that was, we kept in touch, of course, with the person, with the client who was driving that conversation at the time. And then we followed the steps in the UK assessment process that they had adapted to our reality. And we already had all the other steps lined up after that because, in case we said, yes, this is going ahead, then we had everything lined up to go. And that's exactly how it happened. So we moved into dog selection. What does dog selection look like? And say, this is the handler we have. It's a highly specialized program. Everyone, a lot of people were on board at C9 Dogs. I haven't mentioned yet, but I need to give a massive shout out to Brooke Anderson, who is someone who a lot of people here know. She has been a massive driving force behind all pretty much all of our new and more innovative programs that we've had over the last few years. It's a strong suit for her, and it's she likes this part of it, so she was a big driving force behind that one too. At the time, in it was both of us discussing all this information from the UK. What's a suitable dog? What's the most suitable dog? How did the UK find? What was their experience? And it was really interesting. In the way that Guide Dogs UK operates, they are a massive organization. They have lots of offices and hundreds and hundreds of dogs, and hundreds and hundreds of staff. So they, in the beginning, they said that some of their instructors, trainers, and instructors who were preparing those dogs were concerned that anytime they said, "Hey, we are going to need one of your dogs," and they thought, "Oh, here we go. You're going to pick, my." The top performing dog, or the dog who's scoring the highest in their assessments, those are the dogs that they're going to pick. And what they found was that not necessarily, it didn't correlate in that sense in the high scoring or the extremely high performing dogs in training, at least not on paper. What they found was that it was a slightly different combination of factors that made the dog su or suitable and successful to be a dog guide suitable to work with alongside a wheelchair, which gave us made us really aware from the get-go. We tried to keep that in mind at all times. The way we went about it, we selected four dogs. Initially, we had a we outlined a profile and passed it along everyone who were training dogs at the time. People put these four names up to us at one point. We spent probably a week or two with those four dogs, looking at them quite closely. We thinned them out to two dogs. We said that for a number of reasons, we think these two are going to be more suitable, more likely to succeed. And those two, we actually trained. Brooke did most of that training at the time. We didn't know where we were going or how big this program was going to be. We rented a wheelchair. We didn't know, we weren't buying a wheelchair, we weren't buying a van, a vehicle to transport a wheelchair. We were nowhere close. It was COVID, but we were nowhere near to that. We were focused on what's in front of us, what's the next step was. And we trained two dogs, which was a little crazy because these dogs were a little different. We thought that they could be matches for the person, but there were enough differences that one has had a certain profile that was different than the other. And we had the luxury then to be able to offer two matches to the person, to that first person in the first program. It was really interesting. The training, what it involved, again, from the program, from what the UK colleagues have been doing. The dog goes through the regular C&I dog program or the regular training cycle, 4 to 5 months. And then the wheelchair specific training is another training cycle of 3 to 4 months on top of that. And so everything, there's basically another layer in terms of client readiness, client assessment. Dog selection, dog assessment, dog training. There's it's when we think of how few dogs make it through any guide dog, dog guide, C&I dog program around the world, there's the bar is very high here as well. And we were trying to give ourselves a lot of time. So when we had the dogs at a point where they were we could offer a trial walk for the person. We did that and offered a trial walk. The selected a dog, agreed with the person on which of the two we were going to go ahead, and then continued, proceeded, pushed forward with that one dog. The other dog became a C&I dog, not a wheelchair one, but just a C&I dog, and moved ahead with finishing touches on that training dog, and then set up a training program that we already imagined it was going to be long. Even for ourselves, it was going to need to be longer because we didn't know it was going to be our first time. So we set 4 to 6 weeks as a training program for that very first one. This was someone who had never had a dog before, or sorry, never had a C&I dog before. And so we knew that there were many firsts here for us and for the client as well. It was a really interesting process. What's more fascinating, we think, is that during that process, one of our existing handlers, who had a dog for, at that point, I think it was less than a year, or maybe around a year, they had a change in their health, a change in their diagnosis, and they contacted us and said, "There's a chance I'm going to need to use a wheelchair in my future." And we just couldn't believe it. It was such a shock. You can imagine how big of a shock it was for the person, but and for us as well, in terms of timing, that if this had happened, God, even a year before or 18 months before, we would have had no answer to them. We would have had, well, that same answer that we probably had from any others before, which is we can't support you, and we need to talk about what the future looks like, but it's probably not going to be working with the dog. And what it meant to us is that in the first instance of the program, in the first year of the program, of our program, we were issuing a new dog for someone who had never had a dog. And then we were immediately talking about what a retraining program could look like for a dog, for a team who's already established. What do we need to do to continue them, to keep them together? It was really fascinating, and we were able to do both. We issued this new dog first, and then we were able to we brought the second dog, the existing Sinai dog. We brought him back to center. I don't remember how long we kept him, but because they had an established relationship with a handler that placed them so far ahead of the curve in terms of readiness. There were much many many fewer questions about suitability, not suitability, but about the probability of success. It was They were really far ahead, and that's how we went about it. We introduced Actually, we didn't introduce the chair. That's the person had already introduced the chair, but the adaptation of the guiding work that we did back at the center, and then we did another. It was a shorter training program. It was probably 2 or 3 weeks that we spent then again with the handler, the existing handler, and their dog, putting them back together, and making sure that both understood exactly what this new reality was. We'll hear from Geraldine in a minute. A big thing that we heard from the colleagues in the UK was that many people, it is a big question, a big conversation point when we are discussing this with people, is the amount, if you want to call it that, the amount of use of the wheelchair. And if people are ambulating, that is very common. You might be walking for very short distances and using the wheelchair for much longer distances. That's just the reality. So some dogs are not going to stop being an ambulating, a Sinai dog doing their original training. But what extra trainings they need then to work with someone in the chair. And there were one of the other major differences to an ambulator, I'm going to call it regular, it's not a great word, but our traditional training program, is that for due to the wheelchair, we also agree with our handlers that the dog or the team will be working on set routes that we will be working with them. So that's a massive difference to someone working with a dog and just saying, "Oh, today I feel like going somewhere I've never been before." And we try to have those conversations with people to say there are risks involved with that, and how much can your dog do in that scenario? So how much preparation do you need to give? Do you need to allow your dog to do that? It's a massive trade-off. We know that. We know it's a massive point of conversation, and it's not something that we do lightly. At the time, we were. And we probably still are very much. We have our own learnings, but we were very much focused on this program that already exists, that works worldwide. We had another instructor. I mentioned Brooke. Yoav Ortov was also involved. He's one of our. He's now actually a team lead for us here in Melbourne. And he's an experienced instructor, and he's been involved in our wheelchair program as well. And then Matt became heavily involved as well actually, it wasn't a few years after. It was pretty much, I think, at the end of this first cycle, Matt got involved. We have a few clients in WA, and now Matt has done some work in South Australia for us as well. I've been talking for a long time. So right now, what it means today is in our first year, in our first 6 months, when we were ready to issue our first dog, we issued two dog. You know, turned out that we issued a new dog and were able to retrain a dog for someone. So there were two dogs almost immediately. And since then, we have. So now it really. Well, I think it's interesting. Maybe it's a bit boring. The UK were telling us they were the biggest agency in the world. They used to graduate hundreds, and by hundreds, I mean several hundred teams in a year, maybe 300 or 400 or more. This is pre-COVID numbers, so it's nothing like what we have in Australia, not for a single agency. And they, in their wheelchair program, they were only doing possibly one team every year. That had been their average for about 10 years. So it wasn't the one team that we were focused on. It was the ratio towards their number of overall new dogs issued to handlers every year was tiny, really, really tiny, and consistently so over a period of time. So we knew that it could be very small for us. It could be maybe one dog every 2 years, but it turns out that we are, on average, we are issuing a dog every year. And so it's 2026 now. The first dog, actually, we'll say that the program started in 1920, but we didn't issue the first dog until a couple of years after that. So we now have six C&I dogs working around the country with people who use a wheelchair. Three of those dogs were existing handlers who had a C&I dog and had a change in health that required them to use a wheelchair for maybe a little bit or for maybe 100% of the time. And we're able to adjust, or those dogs were able to make that transition, and so did the handlers, and we supported that. And three of those handlers were people who had never had a C&I dog before, and we follow the process. That's all we can do. That's all we commit to doing. Follow the process, and we thought that a C&I dog would benefit them, and then embarked on that program on the steps again. That's where we are now. It's been a long spiel, but like I said, it's something that we are proud of. Geraldine, I guess it would be really interesting to hear from your perspective as well, how that went for you. And you have, of course, a lot more experience as a dog handler as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
You say I've been around for a long
No.
time. Well, it's true. Thanks. That was really interesting. I found a whole lot of new information there I didn't know either. So that's really good to hear. And first off, I'd like to say, thanks for having us all on tonight, everyone, because it's just so good to be able to spread the word, especially when we've got such a aging population too, and people, including myself, I'm talking here, I'm in my 70s. But yeah, so I had a change in circumstances, and I was talking to Matt at one stage. Hi, Matt. Thanks, Matt, for coming on. And
Thank you,
feel
Ryan.
free to jump in, Lester or Matt, please. But spoke to Matt, and Matt basically told me, oh, interesting, you've developed this condition that's affected your ability to mobilize like I used to and to walk as far as I used to. And so I was thinking, oh well, Noodle's going to be my last dog. And after having five seeing eye dogs or dog guides over the years, I was sort of thinking, oh, it's really confronting because she's getting older too. And I think I'm just trying to remember, Matt, but it's probably getting close to 2 years ago we did the program now. I don't know. Time goes so fast. 18 months, anyway.
At least, yeah, we have a
Yeah.
lot of, as Lester said, we are very careful that we set up things really carefully. And I was thinking, in our situation, we also needed to acknowledge the staff from Census WA, with the occupational therapist and physiotherapist
Oh,
were
fantastic.
fantastic helping to get all the logistics set up. So I'll let you get going, Geraldine.
That's all right. No, it's good to have your input because it was a real team effort, and Senses Foundation, as you said, the physios, the OT. I don't know how many hours that our OT spent with us going through the right chair for me and helping us to pick the right motorized wheelchair. And that was a big thing just on its own. Before we could even think about retraining Noodle, from being able to, well, she still guides me short distances using a traditional harness, but then she guides me longer distances using, it's a Swiss harness, I think it's called, isn't it? With a long handle,
Correct.
a very long handle, so that the dog is actually placed well in front of the chair. So I'm not running into her back feet or anything. And surprisingly, she adapted to it so quickly. I was quite astonished because I think our program ran for about 2 weeks and she was up and running. So it was fantastic. And Matt was coming most days, I think, and spending time over that time. And then he was happy in that couple of weeks that she was doing the right thing. And she was enjoying it actually, the challenge of it. And she still likes that difference between regular mobility so it's just a different harness, different style of harness, and it puts her well out front of the chair. I just like to say a bit of a sound here too. I don't know if they'll ever hear it, but Trans Perth were fantastic with us too in Perth.
So
Right
good.
to the point where they gave us our own bus route, didn't they? To
Right.
try without the people on the board the bus, getting on and off the buses and helping us on and off the trains and all that sort of thing. So that was fantastic as well. But it's so reassuring to know that, when, well, Noodle's 8 now, when it comes time to retire her, that I won't have to say, oh, well, I can't have another dog. I'm very grateful that Seeing Eye Dogs took this program on because, it's your getting out to the world, isn't it? How you get out and about and your access to doing things on your own or as a team and be confident in doing so, knowing that, that you're safe together and the dog's enjoying what they're doing. And that, you're getting that mobility that you otherwise would have lost that freedom. So that's been fantastic. And I'm very grateful for that opportunity, I would say.
Yeah, that's thanks, Geraldine. And you just reminded me, Noodle might be the first, that would be first for us as well, in the first dog retiring, the first wheelchair seen eye dog
All
who
right,
retires.
yeah.
It might be Noodle on age, but that's how it goes. She might go until she's 12, so
Yeah, who
let's
knows?
stop.
Who
Yeah.
knows? For
The
those
other thing,
that
have got a vision paper, that was Matt just slapping his face, thinking, "Oh my goodness, I've just retired a 12-year-old dog, and it took yeah.
4 years to convince that
And
client."
how I know, yeah. So
Thanks,
that's a
Tessa.
different 3 hours that we need for that conversation, Matt, with this group. I don't want to create any controversies here, but the NDIS doesn't yet support fund any of this work. And so we have hopes, we have thoughts of on how when and how we can try to impact that, but that hasn't happened. And so we have been thinking, of course, building a body of evidence that we can then get to that point, but it might we'll see how we go. So which is to say that we've had well, incredible support from Vision Australia from for to so that Seeing Eye Dogs can do that, but we had really some amazing donors, specific donors for this program, people that understood really how we were, what we were about, and when we were getting this going. So it's been really beneficial for us, of course, to allow us to do that. We did, I think it was just last year, so maybe for the last couple of dogs that we placed, which I know it's a lot. Two dogs doesn't sound like much, but for this program, it's a lot. We have now our own wheelchair, which is not a which is a pretty simple wheelchair in the big scheme of things, but it's enough to allow us to do these things, of course. And we have thoughts on how things are going to happen in terms of the NDIS and how it can happen, but that's kind of a long road ahead. The one thing that you brushed on, Matt and Georgine, you mentioned Sensens, and you mentioned occupational therapists. That has been it's been a it was an interesting learning for us when we were developing it and getting this information about how does he work. Is there a wheelchair or are there, you know, is there a list of wheelchairs that we should be looking for, people should be looking for, and there's no such thing. So we want people to have the wheelchair they need for their needs first and foremost. The dog is a step after that. So that's a really important part, and it's a pretty, you know, expectedly is a conversation that we have with people who contact us interested in the possibility of getting a wheelchair seeing eye dog. Is that conversation is a big one. I didn't mention when I was giving the overview, but it needs to be an electric wheelchair, so not a manual, not a self-propelling one, electric, and wheelchair alone, so nothing related to scooters or other types of motorized mobility devices, which is also a common question that we have, and maybe it was a question that was coming later, but scooters are not conducive to this, to the program and the work that the dogs are trained to do. And same thing for
Sorry,
the
Lester,
manual.
just can I just say in there, minor but significant concept to grasp is that the dog is not pulling the chair and the client.
No.
The dog is guiding the chair and the client. For the untrained eye, you would think that, you know, a very enthusiastic dog looks like it might be pulling the chair, but and you and I both know that the weight of those chairs. When we're trying to lift them in and out of vehicles, a dog isn't capable of doing that for any distance anyway. So it's that's something important to remember for everybody too.
And that's why you need to have a wheelchair tailored to it, something that's not projecting too far in front of you. I call my wheelchair like a little tiny one, really, in comparison to some of the motorized chairs that are out there. But it's a comfortable one, and it's, you know, does the job that I need it to do. And it's just for those listening, you know, today is it's so important that it is not projecting too far on the dog. When you're in a scooter, you've got your hands out in front and the big scooter in front of you too. So that it's just not possible to have a scooter. Whereas the wheelchair needs to be selected very carefully so that it works well with that dog and you're not going to run over the dog or anything. But they guess, and you could feel the guiding through the harness very well, actually. I was really surprised the first time I picked up the harness, how much feedback I was actually getting from with the right harness and the right harness handle length and all of the things that were looked into, how much feedback I was actually getting. So, like everything else, but you have to just tailor things. I know Matt helped me with some of the turns where you have to think a little bit more about so that the dog's got room to do the turn. And but yeah, we did all that in the training. So yeah, there were just two things that are different from walking with your dog. But yeah, very successful.
How do you go with the so you have different equipments, Geraldine, different harness for when the times when
Yes.
you're walking and
Yep.
the times when you're in the chair?
That's correct.
How different do you find those then? You just mentioned that the wheelchair one works really well.
Well, they are different. I think I should get more feedback on the wheelchair one because of the longer handle. I don't know. It seems that way. I still get plenty of feedback in my regular harness, but and I do a few sh short walks a week, not that many, but I do a lot of the long walks, and so Yeah, I get more of a comparison that, but they're two different harnesses. I've got the traditional, and I got trying to remember the name of that other harness that I got recently for walking with Noodle. It wasn't the traditional cedar harness. It's another one that works quite
The
well too. But
Julius?
Julius, yes, Julius harness. Yeah, I got one of those for walking
Right.
regularly. But I was originally using the Julius harness with the wheelchair till we got the Swiss harness.
Right.
And that worked well there too. But having the Swiss harness with the longer handle gave me so much more feedback. So, yeah, I don't know what the length difference is in them. Matt might know, having a rough idea, guesstimate. Quite a lot, isn't it? Sorry, I
It's
put you on the
almost,
spot there, Matt.
is it, would it roughly double, maybe
Yeah,
a
I
little
would think
shorter than
so.
double than your standard?
Yeah.
Because we started with as long a handle as we could find to
Yeah.
fit onto our standard or the Julius.
Yeah.
But yeah, once we had access to the Swiss with that longer, specifically designed, and it clips onto the body harness of the dog or the body piece differently also with the structure for those that are familiar with the buttons on the Swiss.
Yeah.
So Lester might have a bit more information about how they specifically designed that and developed it, I guess.
I've thought about trying to give a description for people. If you know the Swiss harness, which is a very traditional looking leather body
Traditional.
piece, guide dog harness, and it's Swiss. It's made in Switzerland. Some people call it it's kind of the Rolls Royce of harnesses, and it still has pros and cons. The wheelchair variant is. In the old days, if you've been around enough, you know what I mean by this is a top fit handle, so that the clips for the handle are not on the sides of the shoulders of the harness. They come together towards the more or less the top of the back of the harness, and they are also on an angle. It's not quite 45 degrees, but instead of being perpendicular, instead of being a straight 90 degrees that the handle juts out, this is more of a 30 or 45 degrees towards the handler, so that the dogs and the handle, like Matt said, maybe it's a, I don't actually, I don't know whether I've measured it. They only have in one size, it's a 40 inch or, when people might traditionally have a 15, 17, 19 inch, this would be 35 to 40. And this angle on the clips allow the dog to actually stay a little bit away from the chair. And it allows the handler to have their hand sometimes, and for a lot of people, they will have their hand, the arm on an armrest on the wheelchair. So it allows that to be the handle to be in an angle, but the dog to be straight. So it's a really interesting piece of equipment. It's really simple, such a tiny change, but it makes a big difference, not just the length, but the angle of this. And the other difference, it's a little subtle, but it's, this of the Swiss harness, if you know it, it actually has a chest strap, a vertical chest strap that comes down the chest. So we never spoke with them about it. Our best interpretation of it is that it stops the harness, the body piece from swiveling, from turning on the dog, because the handle is so long, a little bit heavier. I guess that it's carbon fiber, it's glass fiber, but. It's when it is down, it does kind of bend on the side of the dog because it's on an angle. It definitely stays on the side of the dog, and it could kind of twist the harness more than a regular harness. So that's the Swiss, and it's specifically designed. My understanding is that it was designed, it was adjusted by in conjunction when the wheelchair program was still at Guide Dogs for the Blind in the US. That they adjusted they created, they co-designed this harness back then, and they still use it. Of course, the UK uses it, so, and we use it as well. It's expensive, but it's easily accessible. So it works. That's the main thing, is that it works.
Certainly does. Yeah.
We've been at it for 45. Do we want to open for
Questions.
questions?
Yeah, good idea.
From anyone, to anyone as well.
Yes, Geraldine, how are you going? It's Greg Madsen here.
G'day,
How are you going?
Greg.
Yeah, just got a question. This is absolutely fascinating. So the dog is in front of you on a long handle. In those instances that we all deal with, where pedestrians just walk across you, looking at their phone, or a car might pull out, and you need to, or the dog needs to stop. How do you go about that in regard to you being in an electric chair, needing to stop in that short distance so you don't run up the back of the dog?
Okay, that's a good question. The moment you take your hand, if you can imagine, I've got my hand on the dog handle. Gosh, I'm doing signs here with my hand. You've got you. I've got my left hand, and I've got my joystick for the wheelchair on the very right. Okay, so the moment I feel her slowing down, like she's going to stop, I just take my right hand straight off the joystick. It stops instantly. The chair stops instantly. So yeah, you don't. It's not like you have a like a car accelerator where it'll slow down slowly. It'll just stop. Boom. If you're going really fast, it might take a millisecond or two to slow you down and stop. But you know, it's very, very quick. So
But
I
you've had
feel it before.
no instances of actually hitting the dog and then the dog being a bit wary of that.
Oh, only initially when we first started, I'd say a couple of times because she was new to it, I was new to it. I didn't hit her hard though, it just tapped her. But I think we only did it once and it didn't happen again. But the dog was fine and you know, she was okay. A bit hard to explain how that happened, but I think it was on a turn that I got too close to her
Was it
when I
in a
was turning.
tight shop as well, a tight turn
A
in a
tight shop, yeah.
shop? And as we know, if for anyone that's had a dog and uses a dog, they're incredibly adaptable, and they will learn from good and not so good experiences very quickly.
Yeah,
It'd be
so
much like, I suppose, walking on the foot of your first guide dog, which
yes,
happens.
exactly. Yeah. But I think because we got used to it pretty quick, Greg, and you know, I got to read her better. She got to read what was going on better. And I was really impressed because she'd been working with me for a number of years at that stage and thinking, you know, how's this going to go? But she loves it. She really loves it. So, you know, it's like, look at me, look at me. And yeah, so no, that's a really good question.
It's Lester again. It's really interesting, Greg, what we found that when we were training the dogs the first time. And of course, we had already heard it, but then when we were practicing ourselves, and it got us, those things that we knew we were going to have to think about. When you are working with a dog, walking with a dog on the handle, you feel a change in direction. Traditionally, you'll be thinking about, well, I'm turning my shoulders, I'm going to think about, or I'm turning my feet immediately, and that's how I'm going to follow the movement of the dog. And in the wheelchair, that you have to process that and think about what that's going to mean, usually on the right hand on the joystick. How are you going to impact? How are you going to drive the chair? So it is a massive adaptation, isn't it,
You need a
Geraldine,
lot
in
of
terms
practice.
of
It
how
is.
and learning, well, relearning, I guess, what you're already doing in one way. So now you're doing it in another way. And that was a really interesting piece of learning. If for people like yourself who had the experience of working with a senile dog. It was really interesting.
I assume, like you were saying, you don't do use the dog on all walks, and the ones that you do use it on would be regular. You know, and having been a dog guide user for a long time, you get this feeling in your head when you know you're going to be turning without even knowing before the
Absolutely.
dog even does. And I suppose you've still got all that you're working on as well.
Yes. So it's still the same in the way of you have to know your routes first, and you have to know how to maneuver a wheelchair first. How to, you know, as you know, I think, you know, back long time ago, I used a wheelchair and I used a motorized chair. So I had a little bit of a head start there because I already knew how to, you know, how to drive the machine. But I think, yes, you need to get used to your wheelchair first. Definitely, I think, you need some OT input to get the right chair match. I'm sure Matt and Lester would agree there to get the right chair for the person, so that they're comfortable, that their back's right, their arms are right, so your arm's not hanging in the air, and so you've got the arm rest to support you while you're guiding, and you're not just got your arm hanging out well in front of you in the outer space, so to speak. But being able to get all of that together and then using your memory of walking and where you're walking and where you're going, what corner's coming up and that. But you still, I've actually found the feedback from the harness really very good. So I think for an experienced handler, it doesn't take too long. For someone who's never had a dog, of course, there's that getting used to a dog first off, that dog guide mobility, and then being able to translate that into using a chair as well.
Lee's Leeds
got a
on
hand.
the tap.
Yep.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lee.
Hi, everyone. Congratulations to you all. What an amazing thing to be part of, and making this happen. So big kudos for that. My question is for you, Geraldine. I was just wondering, with the dogs so far out in front and both your hands kind of being occupied, what is the main way that you kind of provide feedback and support to your dog in situations where it's required?
Okay. The instructions to your dog are very similar. Find the way. There's a corner coming up, so find the right. And this is going to sound really weird, but I feel when I'm using the chair and the dog, it's different, of course, to when you're walking and or you might come over a regular bump that you come over or whatever. But you still get to feel it in your chair. I've got wheelchair wheels that are non-pneumatic, so they don't pump up, so they'll never go flat, which is a really good advantage. But I actually get to feel the same bumps with my chair, and not that it's bumpy, bumpy, but you just get to get the feel of it as you're regularly doing it with walking. It's hard to describe it. It's amazing how our brain gets adjusted to that different form of feedback that you're getting. So what you're feeling with your feet and that type of thing, or from the environment, might be a light laneway coming up. You still feel all those things, but it's in a different way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it well, it does make sense. I guess what I was wondering is more about how you provide feedback to your dog. Like, is
Oh,
it,
okay.
like positive feedback, or that sort of thing? Because the dog, I'm imagining this, is so far away from you. I just wonder how you go about doing that. Because when I think about working with my dog, she's only, a hand span away from me, so I can reach down and pull her ears or blow her on the nose or whatever it is that, gives her that feedback. I was just wondering what you do for that.
Okay. So I guess it's still, to me, it's still much the same. You could still feel the dog. It's just that you're feeling it through a longer handle. So, and you, like, for example, if you're coming up to a curb, you could generally feel that change in the pavement. So you'd be saying, up to the curb, find the curb, and it'll be her that stops at the curb, not the chair. You understand what I mean? And then you would give her the same instructions when you know, this is why you need obviously to know your route. There's a corner right-hand turn coming up. So you'd be saying something like, as you would with a when you're walking with a dog, find the right, find the way, good dog. All the same sort of commands you use, you would still use, but you just have a little bit more, I guess, notice of these things coming up because of the longer handle. So you
Thank you.
still give the same commands,
Yep.
but yeah, it's only difficult when you're going in to say, I guess if you go into a shop and they've moved, say, a bollard in front of you or a sign, you know, those lovely street signs they like to put
Oh, yeah.
out. But of course, then the dog's going to do what they normally do. They're going to slow down and stop. And, you know, you'll say, find the way, and you'll notice that the dog will take you around. So it's interesting. You know, I didn't know how it all was going to work either and couldn't imagine it all. But when it actually became that reality of putting it all together and doing new, well, you know, changeable type situations like that. You know, suddenly you realize, oh, the dog's doing exactly what you want them to do, and but I could feel it a bit earlier. I've got time to react, and I could still give her the good girl, or you know, you silly dog, didn't you see that? you know, or leave it when you know that. Oh, that sandwich looks a little bit more interesting than me doing the walk to
Yes.
the you know. They're still dogs. They're still going to
They
do good
so
things
are,
and
yeah.
bad things. But yeah, generally it works very well, Lee. So great question.
Fascinating. Thank you.
It is fascinating. Yeah.
It's Lester again. I'm just going to mention it might be interesting to people, but in terms of training, one of the dogs we placed, oof, I think it was last year, maybe last winter, I want to say. The person, the handler, is non-speaking, so we had every single session had an Auslan interpreter along with the instructor, and of course we knew that from the get-go, so the dog's training was adjusted for that, as it would happen if someone was ambulating and didn't use voice. We adjusted the training. We adjust the training in some other ways, just as a matter of course, for the wheelchair program. So different people, different abilities on the wheelchair, and so even things like putting on the harness can be quite different, you know. So that is a big part of the process of the assessment process with people as they are onboarding into the program. Very common, what we do is that we offer to people, if they think is going to be useful, is to train the dog to stand basically on, to either use the footrest of the wheelchair or stand on the ground and put their feet up on their lap. If people can stand that, because for some people that's painful, but for some people that's highly practical, because that's the dog's head and chest, they can put the harness on really easily that way. So that's something that we've done. We've done other things like, we've done that to also to allow for people to give physical praise, Lee, if you know, one of the things you were mentioning just before. So not at every single curb, but maybe at destinations, you know, that would be an easy way. People would still use food for positive reinforcement,
Absolutely.
and it just depends then if they wanted to make a big fuss of the dog, as you would in a big success. The dog can actually, they would tap their legs or tap their chest, and the dog would just stand up on them, and they'd be able to have to have the secondary reinforcement as well. So just different things we try to find. Some of them are actually quite individualized, the solution for what the person has. And we've used things as someone's environment. You know, handler lives in an apartment building. When they go downstairs to toilet the dog, well, for the big toilets, they have a small veranda space they can use. But when they go downstairs to use the grass, there's a big concrete bench, so they can use that as well, as the dog would just hop on there to put the toileting harness on. It was an easy-ish, you know, individualized solution. It works really well for that team. So it's things like that. It's finding answers for what people have in front of them.
Yes, it's tailoring it to everyone. I'm a member of Senses too because I have hearing loss as well now, and you know, joys of getting older. plus, developed a lung condition, and as most of you know, I have MS as well. So these were all sort of contributing things to you know, needing to join the wheelchair program. But it's been all positive, so been very happy. So
Nadia
good.
has a question.
This is a question for probably Lester and or Matt. Is there any learnings that we have learnt here in Australia that we've fed back to, I guess, the countries where the program is more developed, that they hadn't learnt? You know, is there anything that we've shared that we've learnt, I guess, from the training that we're doing here as opposed to what's happened over there?
A good question. Probably not yet, Nadia. The other thing that happened is, unfortunately, the what was it called? I forget the Lee Stanway, who's the I forget his role, his title at Guide Dogs UK when he gave us the program, when he gave us the information. He's no longer there at in that position, so I'm not sure how they are going with that with the program at Guide Dogs UK. And at Guide Dogs for the Blind, to best of our knowledge, they had, it's not that they had ceased the program, but they don't advertise it anymore. What the best information we could gather was that they would only do it, they would keep supplying their existing handlers, but they didn't have it open for new handlers anymore. So both their those programs were slowing. Actually, I shouldn't say, I don't know, the UK one is slowing down, but it's just the contacts are not the same. We and the other thing, even though it's been a few years, it's we feel like it's still early days for us in many ways. So we are we did I presented at the International Guide Dog Federation conference last year. It wasn't specifically about this, but I talked about our programs in general, and this program was included, and it was great because Lee was in the room, and we you know, I've been able to see him a couple of times since, and to give him many thanks for having done that work. And so he knows we're up and running, but I don't think it's, yeah, we've done anything too out of the box just yet, but you know, might be coming.
As I said to you, Lester, sounds like a PhD coming on for someone, but not me.
Yeah, no, it's lightning striking twice there,
Been
Geraldine.
there, done that. Matt, did you want to put your two bob's worth in?
Well, no, just to add that, yeah, as I walked into this when I came over from the East Coast, because there was already an existing handler here who had also made the transition from ambulating to her chair, and that fascinated me straight away. And then when you and I started working together. As well, Geraldine, it was just wonderful to be able to work with Noodle, with your existing dog, to adapt her. So I'm, as Lester hinted at, I assisted in the program in Adelaide, where that was a specifically trained dog, brand new dog for that handler. So I'm looking forward to. As Lester knows, we like to be at the cutting edge here in Western Australia. So I think there was a possibility I heard last week of maybe another person who's keen to start a program. So who knows? Yeah, that will be the first time that I start with a new dog for a new person, first time. So yeah, every day, as we all know, every day is a different story. And whether or not that comes to fruition, it would be an exciting development for us here as well. But yeah, it's been fascinating. And as you said, Geraldine, some of the support that we had from some of the organisational stuff, like your local shopping centre, Transperth, there was nothing that we could ask that they weren't able to do for us. So,
That's right, yeah.
yeah.
Fantastic.
We've exhausted everybody's
I think
enthusiasm.
so. Anyone got any questions?
Yeah, sorry, it's Greg again. I'm just interested in the NDIS side of things. I can certainly
Yeah,
see
good
the
point.
NDIS
Yes.
saying it's too expensive. We're not going to fund it. You need to get a support worker and push you around.
Nick.
So I'm pleased to hear that Lester and Matt are obviously putting together some evidence to show that obviously independence is a big thing. Certainly you can get a support worker to push around, but that's not independence.
No.
But being able to get out into your own community independently is a big thing, and I just don't see why the NDIS don't see that as something that's worthwhile following.
Yeah, when we first, I think the very first program, I don't remember to be honest, it was the first or second program, we did look into it. People were, as you know, because the whole NDIS, it can be complicated if people are a participant for a certain diagnosis and diagnosis change. And then they have to go through that process, but the what was became a barrier at the beginning, or now we know it's a part of the process, is people couldn't even get a wheelchair funded, so some people had to source their own wheelchair. That's still a reality. That's still people that we are working with, and so.
Interesting, isn't it? Because and sad because they funded my wheelchair and they funded a hoist for the back of our car, which is actually a really interesting one, everyone. It's like folds into the back of a car. And they funded that as well, but maybe because I had pre-existing MS as well. I don't know, but whatever it was, I was very grateful for it. But I don't know about the training with Matt. Matt, you would know. Was that, did we get that through the NDIS or was that other funding?
That's another great thing about Vision Australia and Seeing Eye Dogs. We are still open and very grateful for donor assistance. And I think Lester will be able to confirm that. I'm pretty sure that our, that whole training component was donor funded.
Okay. Yeah,
I
because I
don't
know we've got
remember, Geraldine, I
some
don't
support,
remember.
didn't we? But yeah.
Training hours sometimes are a little simpler to obtain with DNDS comparing to some equipment, but I just don't remember. But yeah, the NDIS experience being uneven and unequal to participants who have similar situations is also a big piece of course, unfortunately, the NDIS experience.
Lee
Yes, Lester.
Kumutat has another question.
Yeah, sure.
If we've got time, so my question is, in some ways, you, Lester, are saying this is sort of a fledgling program, but it sounds like you're pretty far down the track, to me. One of the things that has happened with dogs who have been trained to guide wheelchair users has also been the ability or the training for them to do additional things like hand money over to cashiers or pick things up off the floor or take washing out of the machine, etc. Do you think there's a possibility that is something that Seeing Eye Dogs would consider in terms of dog diversification?
Yeah, that's really interestingly. That one, in a way, it's very much of the times, and
Yeah,
in another way,
absolutely.
it has never gone away. It's been
No,
there for a long time.
that's right.
For the answer nowadays, I think we are better trainers than we've ever been. Animal and understand behavior more than we ever understood it before. So there are tasks. I think it's going to be a bit of a half answer. There are
Okay.
tasks that we could, and there are tasks that I'm less sure. Some of the answer in the past has revolved around, and I've been part of those conversations where people who are deafblind came to us and said, "Can my dog do both? Can my dog do alert, for instance, do hearing dog tasks, and guiding when I'm out and about?" And at the time, and the agencies that we consulted with at the time, it was always the barrier was always that either side only knew their side. And the second barrier, which always sounded very logical to me, was that dog selection was also a big factor. So a dog that could be successful for one role didn't necessarily mean, so it would be like finding a unicorn. So that possible, and to some degree has been done. You will find examples of people having done it, but the difficulty of getting it done was one of the barriers. So for our dogs to do simple things like, for instance, opening a cabinet with an adapted handle or collecting something off the floor to hand to the person, those sound fairly simple, and it wouldn't take long to train the dog to do those. It would be a fascinating conversation. How far do you take it? You know, how far do you want to take it? How far should you take
Absolutely.
it? But to some things, yeah. For us, to complement the answer is to say we'll always focus on it'll be a seeing-eye dog. That's what we do. That's what we know. So it'll be always be a seeing-eye dog first. That's the answer that we've stood by for a long time, and it's not meant as a limitation, but it's the starting point, right? So we think as well as any type of conflicting training that could impact the guiding or the safety of the team
Absolutely.
when guiding, then that becomes a big reason for us not to do it as well. If all those things line up, I think we could. And as I mentioned, yeah, maybe I'm downplaying, but some of that adaptation even in this for this program, you know, in having a dog stand up on someone, that is such a no-no, right? In a regular training, we don't want dogs standing up on nobody
Totally.
ever. But oh no, we train that. We encourage that then in this particular way in a very controlled setting. So it's doable. It's very possible. Yeah.
Hi, it's Jamie from Melbourne speaking. Apologies late after the call, and great presentation, Lester and Matt and Geraldine. Haven't been to one of these meetings for years, but I just wanted to ask two things. Home care, what about people over 65 with funding? And also, listening to Geraldine, I'm just wondering, imagine the dog in front of the wheelchair, you know, holding onto the harness. Is the dog attached in any other way as well? Like I'm thinking about the leash, dog distraction, that sort of thing.
Yes, she's still got the lead on and still got I could still do a check through the lead, but that would require me to take my hand off the joystick if I had to do that. However, I found the Swiss harness is quite good for doing the handle check, so she knows, hey, don't eat that sandwich. She's still getting those checks, and I can still do them through the harness handle, and of course my voice, tone of voice, and all of that. And I can actually stop her, like if she's found the curb, I can still give her a treat at the curb. It's hard to explain. They're about a dog length in front of you, I would think, or three quarters of a dog length in front of you.
Yeah, yeah.
They're still within reach, but and they'll soon turn their head around quickly for a treat.
I was about to say, Geraldine, they're a Labrador, so they
They're
would.
still Labradors.
Exactly.
They are, yeah. I didn't talk a lot about that part, Geraldine. You've explained it a few times. The dog is able to look, if they look right, if they're on the left-hand side, as with most people, they still are. They could be on the opposite side too, but they are able to look in front. If they look to the other shoulder, they are looking ahead of the wheelchair, so they can look both ways there. But they are not in front, and they're definitely not in front as in, in a single file. Yeah, they're not
They're
in a
off to the
single
left.
file. So the dog is off to the side, but they are in front in terms of guiding, same as you are, as if you are ambulating. They are some part in front, but instead of being, it's not 100% accurate, but the best comparison would be when you are ambulating and they are three quarters in front of you, you are more or less in line with their back legs. There, maybe the front wheel of the wheelchair will be in line with their back legs, so that they are then that much in front of the wheelchair, but they're not completely in front of the wheelchair. What Geraldine has been talking about in the turns, for instance, the team has to be pretty in tune. But the training is different. It's just it takes it's a bit slower, I guess, and it's more deliberate. So a turn may involve slowing down, or a turn may involve a full stop. And you might look like a full stop, but it's actually quite fluid. It's just enough notice for handler and dog to understand this is what's coming up, this is what needs to happen. And it's instead of maybe a slowdown, it'll be a much heavier slowdown, you know, to allow both to be ready for it. And that's left or right. It's not just that the big bad wheelchair is going to bump into the dog. That's not how we see it. And that's definitely not how the dogs see it as well. The dogs are actually quite sturdy physically and but also mentally in terms of the relationship in Geraldine's case and in the other handlers that we've had in a similar case. The relationship, as you know, it's not it cannot be underestimated. You know, a few years having been together with a dog, it's not anything that us as instructors really have or experience with the working dog. It's but we know that it's something different. And so that's really it's a gigantic foundation to build this transition on. The funding, Jamie, is well, I don't have high hopes for our supports at home in current state, but the program as it is, you know, it has been throughout the whole time funded by donations within Vision Australia. So we I'm not sure if that'll continue, and it's but we I think that initially we'll be looking at the NDIS. We would always inquire, of course, with my aged care and the other side of things, but we don't know. Don't know. Not sure if that would be really something that would be. They seem to have a different type of limitations to the NDIS, but the
Nurse
program will
got a
continue.
question.
Yep. Anna?
Yes, there we go. I was just trying to find my unmute. wasn't quite ready. Yes, and this is, I suspect I know the answer to this one, but I have been, you know, because I work as an independent instructor. I have been asked by someone, one or two people in the past, you know, to help them with the, you know, with the dog for, yeah, as a guide with their wheelchair. And I've pretty much just said to them, I have no idea. Speak to Vision Australia. Would you say that that's the wisest plan? I mean, it sounds like it's very involved, and a lot has gone into it in terms of really understanding, you know, how the dog would be positioned, what kind of harness handle, you know, all of that, all of the nuance that it goes with. I mean, I'm all for people having a lot of choices and to be able to, you know, have access to things. And then I'm also very much for people to have expert advice and not something that's done kind of half the level, or you know, I guess not necessarily me understanding all the risks and all the nuances that they'd really need. So, yes, just curious of your thoughts. Would you say that's the best answer? Head to go to Vision Australia. They can they can do
Yeah, I mean, it's an answer.
that.
Hopefully we can, and hopefully people are happy to request services from us. It's a tough one in that, yeah, same thing. We want people to go where they want. But it's a fair point. I guess the nuance would be about the type of service. You know, if people want the dog training or dog related support, or if you'll be other type of support in terms of orientation, for instance, maybe that's where my mind goes immediately. But yeah, like everything else, we do want to get to a point where with any handler where people are the specialists in their lives, and so they are, you know, they know, hopefully they know what they need to know about their dog and their independence. So it's an interesting one. I don't have a full answer. I don't want to say, we'll never be able to say, it's just, it doesn't exist anymore, right? In Australia, the idea that people, you must only go here, you only go to this shop, that shop, it doesn't exist. So recommendation, maybe. But if people want to try something, yeah, I think everyone's a grown up. What are they after and what do they want? What are they going to get out of that?
Yes, I don't know, one of the questions was, oh, I'd like a longer handle for my harness. And I said, I've got no idea how to even access that. So
Yeah, right.
again, I was like, yep, no idea. I don't know what length and I don't know how to
Right.
access that. And yeah.
Yeah, look, we were, I mean, looking at this, and as I have been looking at it from the beginning here of our program, is it's very clear that it's a niche program within a niche industry, you know. So it is the numbers and the involvement and understanding knowledge and experience, it's very limited. That's absolutely, it's people can, the Julius, for instance, is a great example of how democratic, how easily available the equipment, guiding equipment is nowadays. But for wheelchair, the only one we know of is the Swiss, and I'm not sure there are one or two of those manufacturers who only sell for organization to guiding organizations. I'm not sure if the Swiss is one of them, but it might be. And so it does, you know, while some people might feel that's limiting, we try to look it from the other side, but we understand how that's not great for some people. But yeah, interesting about the equipment. I haven't seen any, and I'll be fully expecting to know that it exists in the wild, some kind of tailored, you know, some manufactured an individual type of equipment for that fits their needs in terms of the wheelchair, a longer handle, but I haven't seen it. We have toyed it very lightly, and there weren't good first results. The Dutch harness that I want to say is Guide Dogs Queensland who uses it, and we have them now as well. It's quite a long handle, and it's an extendable handle, on the Dutch harness, but even at its longest point is not as long as the Swiss harness.
Is that what the one Lester that has the single, like just a handle, a single handle post that comes out from the harness and it's on top?
No,
No,
that's
like
an
a
American one.
T-bar.
That one is
That's
definitely, that's really short. Yeah, that's the opposite. That's the
yeah,
rough
okay.
wear. It's a
Unifly.
rough wear brand. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The
I can't
Unifly
remember.
is the
Cool.
name of the model. The Dutch harness is, how do I describe that? It's a really simple, pretty clean body piece. It's almost like a minimalist version of the Swiss harness, and it comes in different. Actually, no, it has colors. Like our organization is blue. I think the GDQ one is maroon, and the. Every bit of it, they only comes in one size. Everything is only one size because they are fully adjustable. So the girth strap is the size it is, the chest strap is adjustable, and the handle is fully adjustable as well. Between, like I said, the shortest setting is actually quite long. So maybe it's between a 17 and a 20 something inches, but it's still not quite, 40 or so inches that the wheelchair one is.
We're late to the 9 o'clock. I'm very sorry to our presenters, but
All right.
it's obviously a topic of interest. Do we have any more, maybe one last question, and then we'll let people go for their dinner for some people and for, I don't know, bed for others. Are there any more questions? Okay, thank you so much, Lester. Thanks, Geraldine, and thanks, Matt. It's been really, really interesting. If people have any more questions, certainly email them to the DGHA at dgha.org email address. We're not AU, are we? I just
We are, are
oh,
you?
AU, sorry, don't forget the AU. And we can pass them on to
Yeah.
Vision Australia. Thank you so much to all three of our presenters.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?